are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast. Do you not like him? Not like what you're saying?
I know he is thinner than he was last year, but he's still fat.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Let's just say it wasn't a good weekend between him losing against the Titans and my whole Tampa Bay, Florida State situation. It was a pretty bad relay of text back and forth.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
My boy!
As a flex play, I know you love Cameron Artis Payne. I don't know for what reason, but you
actually love him. Jonathan Stewart. Or if you need 1 yard, I'm going to get you three. Mm-hmm. If you need 4 yards, I'm going to get you three.
We are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 85 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits football podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. No, I'm doing well, man. I'm kind of recuperating from the snooze fest that was Thursday Night Football. It was a pretty terrible game overall. I know a million people are out there saying LeGarrette Blount is going to be a stud this year. We'll see about that, but it's been a pretty nice couple of days. I'm just happy football's back. I mean, it's week three, and I'm still just ecstatic that we're in the middle of the season.
Yeah, it is week three, which means 1/8 of the season is over.
We're getting there. It's close.
Yeah.
Fantasy championships are right up our alley.
If you've started the year out 0-2, you are in a hole. You know, this is unlike baseball, unlike basketball, where it's a long season. It's a grind. This is a sprint. And we're going to start talking about guys that you may have drafted high that you may need to reevaluate and things like that. So we're going to jump right into our week three preview. Let's talk about the Arizona and Buffalo game. And I think I'll start with my take for this game. I want to see who the real Tyrod Taylor is. You know, I think this is a really good example of a game in which, you know, it could go either way for him. I like Arizona's defense, but I love Arizona's offense, and I think there could be a lot of garbage time points available for Tyrod Taylor. He really needs to put together a good game to be considered a viable quarterback in fantasy. We saw a little bit of that in the previous game against the Jets. We did not see it at all in week one. So I'm very interested to see how Tyrod Taylor does. I have a feeling that Arizona is going to blow out Buffalo in this game.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't know what to make of Tyrod Taylor, to be completely honest with you. The thing that worries me the most is Sammy Watkins not being healthy. And, you know, if he continues to kind of go down this path, then, you know, really it doesn't leave any viable passing targets for Tyrod Taylor. So at the end of the day, you know, regardless of what we feel about him as a player, I know that you've been kind of skeptical about him since day one, really. Not skeptical.
I am the leader of the bandwagon against Tyrod Taylor.
Yeah, which, you know, I can understand to this point. Last season he was second in rushing yards at the quarterback position, and that's certainly something that we, you know, loved coming into this year. But right now he's only had 7 rushing attempts and 36 yards, and I think that that's something that teams will continue to focus on with Taylor, especially if Sammy Watkins is out, and, you know, or if he's just that limited that he, you know, just doesn't really need to be covered, you know, or double teamed or anything like that. So for me, I'm my stock on Tyrod Taylor is quickly going downward, and I don't think we need to wait to see what the real Tyrod Taylor is. I think that he is just not going to be a guy that we can rely on as a quarterback one some weeks and just a firm quarterback two. I think he's going to be a back end top. You know, I think he's going to be a 25 or less quarterback this year, which I did not expect coming into it. You know,
is there a wide receiver on the Bills team other than Sammy Watkins that interests you in any format?
Not really. If I'm being just completely honest, if I had to pick one, it would be Robert Woods. But I mean, really, it would just be Charles Clay if I was just if I'm going with a pass catcher in general. It would be Charles Clay because, you know, at least he had, you know, he had 7 targets last week. You don't know, he is not consistently healthy and his knee has consistently been a problem these last couple of years. But at least as a guy that I can use in some matchups, I feel a little bit better about Charles Clay than I would anybody else. Robert Woods still is just not, you know, amounting to much as a receiver yet.
So you're not buying in on Marquise Goodwin's big day?
No, not at all. He's a fine runner. I think we all know that. He, you know, I believe qualified for the Olympics in terms of track and field. So, I mean, we all know he's a burner, but, you know, we can't rely on those guys.
All right. You have a take for that game?
Yeah, for me, it's the Arizona wide receivers. I think that, at least in my opinion, that Larry Fitzgerald is a sell high. Because for me, like, he has 20 targets in the first 2 weeks of the season. I just don't see that continuing. And maybe he does get heavily targeted, but this is a guy that at least the second half last year wasn't nearly as good as he's been now. And, you know, he's just been getting a ton of red zone looks as well. I think that this is a perfect time to buy on Michael Floyd. You know, the fact that he just hasn't done much in the first few weeks of the season, only 5 receptions, you know, the first 2 weeks, and only, you know, that's on 13 targets. So the, you know, the fact that he hasn't been efficient is, you know, something that's weighing on fantasy owners' minds as well. But I love Michael Floyd. I still, you know, watching him on the field, he still is very skilled. He, in my opinion, is the most talented receiver on the team, other than David Johnson, if you're looking at it from that. But I just feel like this is a perfect time to sell on Larry Fitzgerald and be able to buy Michael Floyd for a pretty depressed price.
I completely agree with you. I think if I had the opportunity, if I could get you know, a wide receiver 2 or low end wide receiver 1 for a guy like Larry Fitzgerald, or even if you're struggling at running back, like if you lost AP, if you lost, you know, one of the other kind of big name running backs that have gone out in the last week and a half, you know, I would love to trade Larry Fitzgerald to get to kind of shore up my my running back core, especially if I'm strong. And on the flip side, yeah, I'm totally buying in on Michael Floyd right now.
Yeah,
I think, you know, he's getting a ton of targets in the red zone. It's just a matter of time before he blows up.
Absolutely. And we, from week 10 on, that's my thing too, is like 3 touchdowns for Larry Fitzgerald in 2 weeks. He had 2 touchdowns from week 10 on last season. So, I mean, there's going to be a ton of regression to the mean here. And I just think that, you know, fantasy owners are so, you know, they look at everything so, you know, recently that they don't really think about the big picture of things. And there's just, he's not a wide receiver 1 in my opinion. And maybe I'm wrong, but that's just me.
All right. Arizona at Buffalo. Who you got, Mike?
Oh, Arizona.
Yeah, I'm taking Arizona too. We're not going to do the point spreads on this episode. If you want to see who I take against the spread, feel free to check Twitter, check friendsoffantasybenefits.com on Sunday morning when I post my bets. I did fairly well in week 1 and atrociously in week 2. So I was bailed out late. A little bit by the Monday night game, having Philadelphia minus the points. But yeah, it was not a good week too against the spread. Let's go ahead and move on to Oakland at Tennessee. Mike, what is your takeaway for this game?
For me, it's seeing how the running back situation for Oakland kind of shakes out. In week 2, Oakland kind of spread around. We saw 20% of the snaps go to DeAndre Washington. We saw another 21% of the snaps go to Jalen Richard, a guy that I love. And we saw 48% go to Latavius Murray. I still think that Murray is the lead dog right now, and there's really no arguing that, you know, through a couple weeks of the season, he is a top 10 running back in standard formats. So, you know, I understand, you know, being okay with him as your running back too, but I also want to see how this shakes out, because this is a situation for me that if we continue to see the backfield get divvied up like this, then you won't be able to really, you know, you won't be able to feel safe with Murray as your, you know, at least a running back 2 if it continues to go this route. We could see, you know, Richard and Washington, who are both, well, Washington more so is more of a skilled, you know, pass catcher than Murray. And if, you know, the Raiders defense has been atrocious, if it continues to go this way, then we could see Washington, you know, kind of earn more and more snaps, which, you know, again, would kind of eat into Murray's value a bit. So this will be a kind of an important week to, you know, see where this kind of progresses and we see more of a timeshare, or if we see Murray kind of you know, get the role back and assume, you know, 60% or more of the running back snaps.
It's not looking good.
No,
I mean,
not
for that. I mean, and this was one of my arguments against Latavius Murray coming into the season. And I think I argued with our buddy Tejo over at Rasball about this because he was like, I don't understand why people aren't looking at Latavius Murray as a potential, you know, top 15, top 10 back. And I said, there's competition in that backfield.
Absolutely.
You know, where there hasn't been in years past. Now, Jalen Richard kind of came out of nowhere, you know.
Yeah, so. And well, that's the thing is people were saying that there was competition prior to the season starting, and that wasn't even factoring in Jalen Richard.
I had no idea. I still have no idea who this guy is, you know, and I watch him every week. I think this is a convoluted situation, and I think it's going to continue to be convoluted, and I want no part of it whatsoever. I mean, actually... I bought Washington in a number of leagues, so that I do have a part of it. But I think you need an injury to one of the three backs in order to make other two viable in most leagues. You know, and I mean, they're going up against really poor defenses the first 2 weeks. So, you know, we'll see how it kind of shakes out as they start playing better defenses. And so far into the season, Tennessee has the best run defense coming, you know, it's a small sample, but, you know, they were pretty decent against the run last year, too. So,
yeah, we'll see.
My take is on the same team, other side of the ball, though. It's the Oakland defense. And I know a lot of people have been given grief because they've been lit up the first 2 weeks. This defense is better than they've shown. And I truly believe it. And I think this is the week the Oakland defense kind of rebounds against a Tennessee team that has no true identity, has no idea what they're really doing, and has one of the worst quarterbacks, in my opinion, or at least not one of the worst. I'm going to say it. He's one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL. Dude, Mariota is not good at football.
No, but he's good this week.
No, I don't think he is, though. That's what I'm saying. I think a lot of people are going to use him in DFS. A lot of people are going to stream him if, you know, in leagues. And I think that's a huge mistake.
We'll see. I put him as a recommended play this week just because.
I think this is a complete trap.
You think so? I mean,
I completely think
last year against Oakland, he put up three touchdowns. So I don't think it's necessarily a complete trap, but there's no denying Oakland's defense so far. And I mean, you're making that claim that you think that it turns around.
I think they were playing two of the better offenses in the league that are used to going down the field.
Yeah.
And I don't think Tennessee has that ability. You were going to see a ton of 7 and 8 man boxes that try to bottle up DeMarco Murray, and when that happens, they're going to put the game on Mariota, and I don't think he's going to be able to deliver.
We'll see. I don't think that Atlanta's offense is that much better than Tennessee's. I mean, I think that there's certainly a case to be made that Atlanta's is better, but I still don't think that it's, you know, leaps and bounds ahead. And, you know, last week Atlanta...
The talent on it is leaps and bounds ahead. Let's be honest.
It's close. I mean, I guess so. Julio being on the team.
Julio in itself is by far the best player on either of those teams.
Yeah.
And then it's an argument who the next best player is.
Yeah. I will say that if it turns into a kind of a grinded game, which, I mean, Tennessee was supposed to come in with this exotic smash mouth style of offense where.
That's what I mean about not having an identity, because the idea was they were going to ground and pound people.
Yeah, and the Raiders' defensive line, while it hasn't been, you know, amazing thus far, they have been. I mean, they have so much talent on that line that they can easily kind of move up the ranks. But their offensive line is still the best in football. It's close with Dallas. So, I mean, if Oakland kind of controls this game, then that's where I feel Mariota can kind of shine a bit if they continue to pass. But if the Tennessee offense does all of a sudden start to move to more of a ground and pound type style, then, of course, you know, Mariota might not have as great of a game. I actually, you know, I have him as a top 10 guy this week at quarterback, Mariota, which is the highest on the site. But I'll be straight up with it. I don't feel completely confident in it.
Yeah. I mean, I know we're not really doing the brag bets this year. At least we haven't been really keeping track of them. But I would say that if we were, I would bet you that Marcus Mariota is not a top 15 quarterback this week.
Well, I would take that bet.
We shall see. I'm not writing it down or anything. Someone will have to remind us. I'm sure the other one will jump up and down on the other one on Twitter. So,
yep, absolutely.
All right. Oakland at Tennessee. Who you got, Mike?
I'm going to go with Oakland.
I'm going to go with Oakland as well. Let's go ahead and move on to Cleveland at Miami. I know you're probably going to want to talk about the running back situation in Miami. I want to talk about our boy Ryan Tannehill. And I say our boy because you kind of were leading the bandwagon this year, and I jumped on. I need to see something from him other than garbage time points, you know, when they're down a ton of points. Though they almost came back and won that game against the Patriots. So yeah, that was somewhat impressive. But he's got so many weapons all across that offense. The offensive line was supposedly improved. And Adam Gase was supposed to be this genius. It's time for Ryan Tannehill to kind of put up or shut up.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, as much as we've seen him, you know, quote unquote struggle, and honestly, he has been struggling the first 2 weeks. It's not been, you know, a pretty sight to see with Ryan Tannehill. He's still a top 10 quarterback right now in fantasy.
But doesn't that speak more to the atrocious play of other quarterbacks in the league?
It could, but I mean, guys underneath him, Jameis Winston, yes, he had a terrible week in week two, but he did put up 4 touchdowns in week one. Jimmy Garoppolo had, you know, a pretty solid week in week two before he got injured. You know, Eli Manning threw for over 350 yards last week, no touchdowns, but he's underneath. I mean, so yes, a lot of this will be adjusted, but you know, this is what I was talking about with Tannehill from day one, is that Adam Gase is kind of a quarterback magician. His yards per attempt is up this year. His completion percentage is up. You know, his rushing ability is still kind of there. He has 52 rushing yards on the year so far, which is second among all quarterbacks thus far, behind Cam Newton, of course. He also has a rushing touchdown thrown in there. I like him for fantasy because there's just so many avenues in which he can produce. And, you know, you kind of already mentioned it. The offensive line is so bad that they want to get the ball out of his hands as soon as possible. With Aaron Foster out this week, I think everybody's already kind of chalking up that this is a cake matchup against Cleveland, who has been absolutely hideous this season. In general, you know, in all facets of the game, really. But, you know, they're bottom 10 in quarterback, you know, fantasy points per game thus far. I have Tannehill as my number 9 guy this week. I know you're pretty high on him as well. You have him at 12. I'm definitely buying him for this week, and I'm still buying him for the season because I like the targets around him. You know, Jarvis Landry has still been heavily used in you know, pretty much the whole entire field. Devontae Parker came back last week, got 13 targets, over 100 yards receiving. I think, you know, Jalen Cameron scored a touchdown. There's multiple avenues in this offense that Ryan Tannehill can, you know, grab some fantasy production, and I think he's going to be a top 12 quarterback at the end of the day.
I hope so.
we all do.
I've bought him in a number of leagues, but it's a matter. I think it's a matter of time before he does it. But it really needs to happen for fantasy owners because, like I said at the beginning of the show, we're 1/8 through the way through the season. Mm-hmm. You know, for those people who play, you know, 15 week kind of regular seasons, this marks a 1/5. You know. Kind of mark.
Very different from fantasy baseball. You know, yeah. Fantasy baseball, it's kind of a marathon. You can
if you start off 0-3, you're in trouble. You're in a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. You know? So, I mean, fantasy owners can't wait around in the same way they do in baseball.
Absolutely agree. Every week counts, and every loss is bigger than you might think it is.
Now, me, I'm 2-0 in the majority of my leagues.
Same here. Yeah.
I'm absolutely crushing this stupid Razzball Dream League.
Which I unfortunately, since I have your Twitter feed, you know, as a notification for me, I unfortunately get to see all these videos, and you need to up your shit talk game. I'm not going to lie.
No, it's been bad. I thought they were due earlier than they were. So like I did mine real quick in like the middle of the night, not realizing they weren't due for like another 2 days.
Like you're winning in the league. You're 2-0, but you really need to up the shit talk ante.
The shit talk in these videos have been fantastic. If you haven't checked them out, you can check it out on Nickel Press TV on YouTube. You can check it out on Razzball.com. You can check it out on my Twitter feed. Some of the shit talk in these videos have been great, especially from Ralph Lifshitz. I mean, he's a baseball writer over at Razzball, and his shit talk has been absolutely phenomenal. What's your takeaway for this game?
You know, obviously Cody Kessler is going to be starting, and that's something I will certainly be watching in terms of this offense. And mainly if you're a Josh Gordon owner, like I am in a couple leagues, this is certainly going to be a week in which you are watching Kessler pretty heavily. to see if he can even throw the ball 20 yards down the field with any amount of accuracy. Obviously, we're praying for Josh McCown to make it back. I mean, but even when he does make it back, every single quarter, every single time that he snaps the ball, you think that it could be the time that he's out for the season. It's just that bad with him. And not saying that he's not talented, because he is. He's a fairly talented quarterback for his age and, you know, just for the amount of crap that he's been through. But, really, the Cleveland Browns quarterback situation is going to have a big, you know, big impact on somebody like Josh Gordon. Terrell Pryor has looked great through a couple of weeks. I actually mentioned him as a flyer DFS play on the pod. So, you know, based on his price, he's certainly somebody that if you're in a bind this week in, some type of a deep format, 16 teams or later, or deeper, you definitely could use somebody like Pryor. But the thing I'll mainly be looking at is just the running back situation. You know, Duke Johnson has gotten a couple, you know, 5 targets in each of the first 2 weeks this year, 7 receptions in those 10 targets, which is nice to see. But Isaiah Crowell has been the guy that's been kind of, you know, taking over a bit in the rushing category. On 30 rushes this year, he's averaging 6.5 yards per touch, and he has 2 touchdowns there. Has over 200 yards of total offense in 2 weeks. Obviously, he's talented, and I think that he is a, you know, pretty decent running back in this league, but he's also not a top 10 running back. So if you own Isaiah Crowell, I think that this is going to be a situation where we, you'll see him go down in terms of running back ranks. And if you can sell him now, that's a move I certainly would be open to doing. I think Duke Johnson is somebody that nobody is talking about at the moment. And with, especially with Cody Kessler, who seems more of a dink and dunk type quarterback, we could be seeing the beginning of Duke Johnson, especially in PPR formats, really rise up just based on the fact that he might get, you know, 7, 8, 9, you know, touch it or targets each and every week based on, you know, the fact that Kessler just can't throw it down the field.
And let's be honest here. Isaiah Crowell had an amazing week last week. Did. But it was all based, or the majority of it was based on an 85-yard touchdown run.
It was, yeah. And but still, though, if you take that out, you have
you take
100...
that out. No, if you take that out, last week he had 17 carries for 48 yards. That is not good.
No, it's not. And Duke Johnson still had, you know, 31 snaps compared to 32 for Crowell in a game that, you know, really shouldn't have been close at all. You know,
but no, they should have easily been able to grind out a victory there.
Mm-hmm.
But they went conservative, especially after the injury to McCown, and they lost that game. Though I did call that. They were up like 20-2 or something like that. And I was like, somehow the Browns are going to blow this game. I don't know how, but they're going to.
Unfortunately, Louisville didn't do that in the Florida State game.
Sorry, bud. All right. The Browns at the Dolphins. Mike, who you got?
Dolphins.
Dolphins. Let's move on to Baltimore at Jacksonville. Go ahead and start. What is your takeaway for this game?
Allen Robinson, I think that this is, I've mentioned on the DFS show, I'm going to mention it here. I think that this is going to be his, you know, coming out party for 2016. He's still getting targeted a good amount. This is a team in Jacksonville that I just don't think anything has changed. You know, we thought that the defense was going to be better, and we thought that this team would be in more ball games based on that. But, you know, for me, at least, I think Gus Bradley is doing a terrible job.
I think at some point you've got to say that this guy isn't very good at coaching.
No, and I mean, there was reasons for letting him stay around these last couple of years because they haven't had the talent to really do much. But this, I mean, based on the game last night, even on Thursday night, you know, obviously the AFC South is kind of a, you know, very lower level league compared to the Patriots and the AFC, you know, East here. And if the Jacksonville Jaguars can't even make an impact in their division, it's going to be a problem when they're facing other teams, not even in the AFC, but also in the NFC as well. Robinson has 20 targets in the first couple of weeks of the season. Obviously, he hasn't put up a touchdown yet, and people are getting a little bit worried based on the fact that he was taken, you know, borderline in the first round in the majority of drafts. But if you can do Larry Fitzgerald for Allen Robinson, I do that every single day of the week. There's just, you know, LeGarrette Blount. If people are willing to buy LeGarrette Blount right now and are willing to sell you Allen Robinson, I would do that. You know, there's so many avenues in which I would try and acquire Allen Robinson based on the fact that he's kind of had a meh first couple of weeks, but this is still one of the top, you know, at least 7 receivers in fantasy, and he needs to be treated as such.
Yeah, I'm a little bit more tentative on that. I think this could be a game in which Jacksonville really tries to establish the run.
Well, Chris Ivory will be returning this week, so we will get to see. I mean, TJ Yeldon, bless his heart, as much as you and I both have, you know, mentioned how much we really like him as a player, he has
looked
awful. Trash.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I don't understand why either. I just, you know, I mean, it's just he does not look like the guy we saw kind of towards the end of last season.
Well, Jacksonville's offensive line play has been terrible. They're 29th, according to the run blocking score on Fantasy Outsider or FootballOutsiders.com, which has a pretty accurate, metrics, regarding those type of things. So, I mean, it's believable when you watch the Jacksonville line. They played Green Bay in week one, who just has, they've been amazing against the run this season. You have to really give them credit, and then San Diego in week two, they really haven't been great, but they still have been a little bit more improved from last season, which they ended up as last in the league against running backs. But regardless, with Ivory returning, hopefully that kind of helps the ground game. But at the end of the day, if the offensive line doesn't pick up their play, then we could just be seeing a running back, a running back 3-4 type of mix between Yeldon and Ivory, and they just won't even be factors.
Completely agree. All right, I was going to talk about Bortles, but I think that kind of goes hand in hand with Allen Robinson. I'm hoping Bortles can actually show something outside of garbage time.
What do you think about Bortles? Because, if you don't recall, I had him outside of my top 10 quarterbacks going into this year. He's really proven me right at the moment, but barely. He's still a number 11 guy based on the garbage time. And that's the thing, is if we feel like Jacksonville isn't going to improve, then Bortles might end up being close to a top 8-7 guy like he was last year because of the volume.
I think Jacksonville's defense is better than they've showed. Yeah. I'll be honest. I do. They may not be working well yet together, but I think that will change. I think they've got, look at their upcoming schedule. Baltimore, Indianapolis, Chicago, Oakland's decent, but then Tennessee, Kansas City. I mean, they've got some games here where they could really really improve and really show some things. I think San Diego may be a little bit better than we thought they were.
Yeah.
I don't think they're much better, but I think they are a little bit better than we thought they were. So I think this, Bortles has been inconsistent, and that to me screams poor offensive line play and just a young quarterback that's kind of learning.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Bortles is going to be inconsistent all year. I think there are going to be games in which he has huge games, and then I think there are going to be games in which you're like, oh my God, I could have started any other quarterback in the NFL and had a better week. and I think there's going to be times in which those games are hard to predict. I think you're going to see games in which you go, ostensibly, the Green Bay game should have been a game in which there was a lot of garbage time. And yeah, he should have racked up some points, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, you're right.
I think it's going to be hard to predict. I was kind of right around where the industry was looking at Bortles, and I think he'll probably end up kind of right around there, which is, kind of a low-end QB1.
We shall see.
All right. Baltimore, Jacksonville, who you got?
I'm going to go Jacksonville just to,
I am too.
Hopefully they get their first W.
Mm-hmm.
Go Gus Bradley.
Let's move on to Detroit at Green Bay. The obvious kind of takeaway for this game is what is Theo Riddick going to do without Amir Abdullah? Is he going, like a lot of people are talking like he is an RB1, and I think that's insane.
No way.
It's a fantasy baseball chat, but a couple of the guys were talking about their fantasy football team. And some guy was all like, well, I think I should try to sell high on Theo Riddick. I was like, I would do that. And he was like, who should I try to sell him for? And some was all like, well, I want a wide receiver one. I'm like, there's no way you get that.
No, there's no way. In PPR leagues, I do think that he is a safe running back too, based on his score alone. But in standard formats, he's more of a flex option. And, especially based on his first couple weeks of the season, there's, every reason to believe that he is a sell high right now. I mean, there's...
I think he is better than we thought he's going to be more valuable than we thought he would be coming into the season. But I don't think his value increases dramatically because Amir Abdullah is out. I still think they're going to share, carries and targets out of that backfield. you know, with whoever they bring in. You know, I think Dwayne Washington is going to hold a lot more value than he did last week, and I think or prior to this last week, and then I think you know, you're going to see a number of guys get touches. I don't think Theo Riddick's value changes. If I could sell Theo Riddick for what people perceive he's worth right now, I'm doing it in a heartbeat.
Agreed. I'd sell him for the guy that I'm going to talk about.
Well, and you know, he was all like, well, who should I try to get? And from this guy who really wants him, and he showed me his team. I was like, Jeremy Maclin.
Absolutely.
And the guy accepted it. Like, I was like, done. Take it.
Absolutely.
Like, you know. So who do you want to talk about in this game?
Eddie Lacy. And at some point,
Eddie Lacy or fat Eddie Lacy?
Fat Eddie Lacy. He doesn't look as fat, and he's still averaging over 4 yards a carry. The problem is they're not giving him the ball. He has 13 touches in each of the first two games, essentially, you know, 26 rushes total, and he's still averaging 4 yards a carry. I don't understand what the Green Bay offense, I know this has kind of been heavily talked about this week. You know, it's certainly been published a ton, and multiple, you know, radio, you know, voices have talked about it as well. But this Green Bay offense hasn't looked good since Jordy Nelson was out for the season last year. And yes, Jordy is making his way back, and he has 2 scores in the first two games. You know, so that's something we like to see. But Eddie Lacy, you know, has not been right, you know, since last season at all. And, you know, even if you look at week 10 and beyond, he was outside the top 30 running backs, which is a problem for us. Mm-hmm. You know, this year, I certainly think that this is a situation where I think that he can be much better than last season. Right now, though, we have guys like Fozzie Whitaker, Chris Thompson in front of him in fantasy points in the first 2 weeks. That's a problem. It really is. It's a problem. So, you know, the fact that he has 26 rushes, I mean, that's still top 20 among all running backs, but I think that that's just a sentiment to how bad the running back position has been the first few weeks with injuries and workload and all that type of stuff. So for me, I'm buying Eddie Lacy right now. I'm not necessarily the biggest fan of him and his talent, at least right now in his career. I certainly loved him earlier on. But I do think that this Green Bay offense has to find a way to get him implemented into the offense and give the opposing defenses just something else to worry about rather than just Aaron Rodgers, you know, airing it out. So for me, I'm definitely buying Eddie Lacy. I think that he is somebody that is affordable right now. Theo Riddick, like we just mentioned, I think is somebody that we can trade in exchange for Eddie Lacy, because people, especially fantasy owners, again, recency bias, they are probably getting just sick of it at this point. Not being able to rely on a guy that you took in the first 5 rounds of drafts is something that people just, you know, especially as the losses pile up, they don't have patience for. So for me, I'm certainly targeting Eddie Lacy, and I do just want to mention on the Detroit side that I love Dwayne Washington so much. He got a goal line touchdown already this season, which is fine, but he was already going to be getting that goal line, you know, type of role even when Abdullah was there. Last week he didn't get a ton more snaps. He only had 11 snaps total, but, you know, 4 rushes for 31 yards. The guy is an absolute athletic freak. He's not David Johnson, but he's a little bit, you know, David Johnson light, I'll say. Very good at catching the ball out of the backfield, very good in space, just an athletic freak. Really, it comes down to him just getting some of the fundamentals down and getting the vision, you know, a little bit better, just kind of fine-tuning his game. But if he kind of figures that out, we could be seeing a guy that's a league winner and he needs to be picked up everywhere. I would trade for him. Whatever you can do to get Dwayne Washington, I am all in for him.
I completely agree with you on Dwayne Washington, and I completely disagree with you on Eddie Lacy.
Oh, wow. Do you not like him? Not like what you're saying?
I know he is thinner than he was last year, but he's still fat. And he looks
slower.
Yeah, he doesn't have the explosiveness. He's a truck.
No.
You know, I don't. I mean, I know you know you're a little bit younger than me, but you remember Lorenzo Neal, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Lorenzo Neal had a saying. He goes, he used to say, "You give me the ball, or if you need 1 yard, I'm going to get you 3. Mm-hmm. If you need 4 yards, I'm going to get you 3.
Yeah.
Like, he's a big dude. He's a bowling ball. He's going to run over people. But there's a limit to his upside because of that. And yeah. I think that's what Eddie Lacy's kind of become. I think there's a limit to his upside. You know, are there going to be maybe a few 100-yard games in there? Yes. Are there going to be any 150-yard games? No.
No, yeah.
And I think that completely limits your upside. And if people are still looking at him like the guy who was, you know, in the discussion for the number one overall pick coming into last season, And I was one of those guys that was a proponent of that.
Yes, you are.
So, I'm not going to, say, I haven't believed in Eddie Lacy in the past. But, I mean, just because he's a little bit thinner doesn't mean he's in shape. And I think one of the reasons why he's not getting huge workloads is because they're afraid of him tiring out.
Yeah. I mean, and James Starks has looked good. I mean, it hasn't really become, kind of produced in terms of fantasy points.
And they're a team. They're a team that wants to move fast. They want to move down the field.
Yeah.
And if you're Eddie Lacy like he is, he can't move down the field like they can. Like the team wants to.
Yeah. Yeah. They've been much slower than they have been in years past thus far.
Mm-hmm. And I think that that's because of the personnel that they have.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, Lions at the Packers. Who you got?
This is a very tough game. I'm going to go with the Packers. Don't feel good about it.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Packers, too, just because they're at home.
Yeah.
And the Lions will line it up. I mean, they just always seem to fuck things over. God, I cannot believe they lost to Tennessee last week.
I can't either.
I mean, it was absolutely atrocious. One of my survivor picks.
I have a very good friend that lived in Detroit, massive Lions fan, and then obviously we live in Nashville, so we hear it all from all the Tennessee Titans fans around here. Let's just say it wasn't a good weekend between him losing against the Titans and my whole Tampa Bay Florida State situation. It was a pretty bad relay of texts back and forth.
Yeah, no, I understand. The Redskins lost to the Cowboys, so I heard my fair share. Let's move on. Talk about Denver at Cincinnati. Mike, what is your takeaway for this game?
I just think that this is going to be a bloodbath of a game in general. I mean, that's really what I'm thinking here.
I'm laughing because I don't really know what to talk about this game.
There's really not much. I have Demaryius Thomas as my 30th wide receiver this week. That's borderline wide receiver 3 there. As far as Emmanuel Sanders, I have him a couple spots ahead, I believe, one spot ahead at 29, because I couldn't decipher which one might have one or two more receptions for a few more yards. Cincinnati's defense has been very good this year thus far, and I am worried about Trevor Siemian in this game. I think that this could certainly be Denver's first loss of the season. I think that this is just going to be a defensive battle. So, in terms of fantasy, you're certainly starting both defenses. I think surprisingly,
CJ Anderson.
Oh yeah, obviously CJ Anderson. But I think that this could surprisingly be a bit of a Jeremy Hill game, because
that's what I ended up coming away with. If I'm Cincinnati, I want to attack the heart of this defense.
Agreed.
I think you're going to see double coverage over AJ Green. I think Brandon LaFell could have an interesting game too. I'm probably not willing to roll him out in a season long, but if I'm looking at a GPP in DFS, I'm going, who's a guy that nobody's going to be on that could have a big game?
I don't think I'll have a big game, but I understand the rationale.
No, I think he could, but I think it's really risky.
Yeah,
With the way AJ Green's been playing, you've got to think that they're going to roll the safety over top on him.
Yeah, and that's true. I mean, maybe Tyler Boyd down the seam. The tight end, Uzama, or however you spell his, or pronounce that guy's
name. I'm not even going to try.
Yeah, he's been getting heavily targeted, and especially in the red zone as well. He has 13. He had 8 targets last week in week 2. 13 targets on the season thus far. Heavy targets in the red zone. So we could see a situation. I mean, if there is one leaky spot, you already kind of mentioned it. It's the middle of that Denver defense. Mm-hmm. It's not leaky. It's just the one spot.
It's the one spot you can attack. Exactly. It's not. It's not that it's even that it's bad. It's just like that. If I'm developing an offensive game plan, it's right up the middle through the heart of that defense. Yeah. I don't want to go on the edge because they've got too many good edge guys. Their defensive backfield is fantastic. The only chance you've got is to really to kind of grind it out and go up the middle with them. AJ Green will still get his. I know he'll be double teamed, but Andy Dalton will throw it in there anyways. But I mean, if you want to win and they want to win, you're gonna have to grind it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Denver at Cincinnati. Who you got, Mike?
I'm gonna go Cincinnati in the upset.
I'm gonna take Cincinnati as well. I don't believe in Trevor Siemian.
Copycat.
let's move on to Minnesota at Carolina. I really want to see what's going to go on with this Minnesota running back situation. I mean, I know a lot of people have been going McKinnon. I think Asiata is going to play a big role, and I think this is going to be a huge mess until AP comes back, if AP comes back.
Yeah, it's certainly something that I'm, you know, from a standard league perspective, I think Asiata is the ad. You know, if you obviously waivers have already gone through.
Yeah, in PPR, I'd go McKinnon, but honestly, if you're rolling out either of these guys this week, it's because you're desperate.
Yeah, I mean, both, you know, what's interesting is both McKinnon and Asiata played the exact same amount of snaps last week to close out the game. And, you know, you can see, you can say, like, there's a just definitely a possibility that both of them, just, you know, just depending on the game script, can have decent games and decent matchups. I think that the one thing I will say is that Sam Bradford was slinging it, and he looked great. You know, there's something to be said for that. And if
as long as he can stay upright.
Yeah, and that's true as well. But if they continue to kind of use their weapons in the pass game more and have Sam Bradford kind of sling it more, then that certainly fits Jerick McKinnon's style much better than it would Asiata. And he is the type of guy, McKinnon, who, you know, was an amazing spark prospect, has all the athletic ability in the world. If Norv Turner, you know, running this offense, decides to go more towards the, you know, olden days San Diego type scheme with Phillip Rivers and Gates having those massive years and obviously LT and everything. But, you know, if they decide to do, you know, have the offense scheme that way, then we could be seeing a guy in McKinnon, especially in PPR formats, that is a league changer. Now, again, that's also, you know, depending on what the scheme is and whether they decide just to kind of go back and forth depending on the week. But this is, at least for, you know, the first week of this kind of being installed, they're both flex plays. You know, I have them both ranked that way. And, you know, I think until we see what this offense looks like this week against Carolina, who, again, is a very good defense, you know, we'll kind of be left to wonder.
Carolina is a very good defense, but they're not as good as they were last year.
No, not nearly as good.
I think we've seen through the first two games that there are some holes in that defense. I wouldn't be surprised if one of these running backs or even Sam Bradford has an even decent game.
Yeah, great.
You got any other takeaway for that, or was that pretty much where you were going?
Well, I am interested to see what Cameron Payne does in this game. I have him as a
my boy
as a flex play. I know you love Cameron Payne. I don't know for what reason, but you
because I hate Jonathan Stewart.
I guess, but you know. Fozzie Whitaker, I think, got the majority of the looks last week just because he was in the game, or he was actually active. You know, I mean, Artis Payne wasn't active the first 2 weeks of the season because he does not play on special teams. But we did see a few times last year, you know, week 15 against the Giants, he ended up getting 59 yards on 14 rushes, a couple receptions for 34 yards, not bad. Against Tampa Bay in week 17, a really solid run defense. He had a touchdown and 44 yards on 14 touches. I think he is a deep league flex play for this week with Fozzie Whitaker obviously mixing in and Mike Tolbert as well. But, you know, with Jonathan Stewart going through yet another injury, this is a guy that we probably will have, you know, some type of fantasy impact for the next 3, 4, 5 weeks possibly. So this is certainly a stepping stone against the Minnesota defense that you're probably not going to play him against, but at least you'll be able to see kind of what his, you know, kind of his workload is and how much he'll be used.
Yeah, for those of you who are new to the podcast this year, I was all over Cameron Artis Payne last year. So, of course, he will actually have this breakout season this year. All right, Minnesota at Carolina. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to go Minnesota.
Ooh. I'm going to take Carolina at home, even though I do love Minnesota.
I will say, on a non-football angle, you know, the prayers go out to Charlotte, and I hope everything kind of, you know, simmers down a bit.
Yes, agreed. Let's go ahead and move on to something a little less sad, but just as racist. And that's the Washington Redskins versus the New York Giants.
One could argue it's just as sad.
Yes, the Redskins are just as sad in every way. go ahead and give me your takeaway for this game.
Yeah, I think that this is like the Kirk Cousins make it or break it from a fantasy angle game this week. I know it sounds terrible, but like Kirk Cousins needs to do something, you know, and right now it's looking bad. And we've always known that he's not a very good NFL quarterback, but we've always kind of hung on to like him possibly being a fantasy asset. Well, right now he's the 21st quarterback in fantasy points over the first 2 weeks of the season, and he looks god awful. So this
is absolutely atrocious.
It's bad. It's really bad to watch, and this has to be a turning point. Last year against the Giants, in week 3, he had 316 yards and a touchdown, two interceptions as well. And then in week 12, he had 300 yards and a touchdown, no interceptions that game. So that's certainly a positive sign for this week. Right now I have him as my 18th quarterback, which certainly shouldn't be a vote of confidence for him. But DeSean Jackson is also very questionable for this game. I think he ends up suiting up. But I like this offense if they can kind of get things in line. Jordan Reed is an obvious start, but the Giants have been terrible against the tight end, not only this year, but they were bottom two last year against the tight end position. Reed's an automatic start, but they need to start feeding Reed and using him as the nucleus of the offense if they're going to get this this thing kind of straightened out, especially for Kirk Cousins. And Matt Jones is important as well because he needs to be able to run the ball consistently well for Kirk Cousins.
He looked good last week.
He did. He looked great. It was possibly the best I've ever seen him look.
Yeah, he looked very, very good, and he held onto the ball, which is really important. As far as, I'm a huge Washington Redskins fan, so I'm extremely biased. And so when I love my team, I love my team. And when I hate certain aspects of my team, I really hate certain aspects of my team. And so when I say I fucking hate Kirk Cousins, like, you have no idea, like, the fire, like, that comes from my soul in speaking about him. He's an atrocious football player. Absolutely atrocious. I mean, it's just ridiculous watching him. And the thing is, like, the coaching staff has done a really great, I've been a very big detractor of Jay Gruden. You know, I've been very critical of him. And I don't know if this is McVay, their offensive coordinator, or Gruden, but the offense in itself, the play calling, the routes they're running have looked fantastic. I can't tell you how many times a guy's been wide open and Kirk Cousins throws it into the goddamn ground or to a defender.
I do want to ask this, because Jameson Crowder looked great last week and in week one, for that matter.
And Doxson's starting to play. I mean, this team is full of a ton of weapons. If only they could find someone to get them to him. I shit you not, at some point Colt McCoy is going to be the quarterback of this team. The team will be better off.
Yeah, and he'll do better. I mean, which is unfortunate.
Bring in Nate Sudfeld. give the kid a chance.
Sudfeld looked good in the preseason. He looked pretty solid.
He's got an arm. Like, Jay Gruden wants to go down the field. Sudfeld can go down the fucking field.
Yeah.
Well, he's just not very bright.
That's what I was kind of alluding to with Crowder is we've seen Crowder lead the team in targets or tied for the lead in targets with Jordan Reed through the first 2 weeks of the season. And then on top of that, we saw Josh Doxson get, five targets in week two. I feel like Doxson, of all the rookie receivers, could be that guy that, has the Odell Beckham type impact as a rookie receiver in the second half of the season if things kind of broke his way and he gets healthy.
And if I'm correct, I believe three or four of those five targets were in the red zone. Like, they looked for him in the end zone. I know at least two of them were jump balls that were just poorly thrown.
Yeah.
In the end zone.
Yeah, and Washington's schedule does lighten up here the next couple of weeks. They end up after the Giants.
Lighten up? They've had two easy games in a row.
Yeah, but I'm talking from a fantasy. I mean, you have Cleveland, who obviously is hideous against, on defense in general.
Sure, yeah.
Then Baltimore, who, almost let Cleveland back in the game last week. Philadelphia is, a decent defense up front, but still has some secondary issues. And then Detroit, and then Cincinnati after that. But before that, I mean,
it's not like Pittsburgh's defense is anything to write home about.
No.
Dallas's defense isn't very good.
No.
Let's be honest. They haven't played good. I mean, even from a fantasy angle, they haven't played good, pass defenses.
No, they haven't thus far. But
I mean, if you think it's going to get better, I can't guarantee it will as long as Kirk Cousins is a quarterback.
We'll see.
All right. I was going to talk about Shane Vereen and how amazing of a play I think he is this week. But we've talked enough about the Redskins. I just got to move on. Play Shane Vereen.
Yeah, play Sterling Shepard as well. I mean, he's done great in 2 weeks, and Victor Cruz is kind of back as well. So, we'll see what happens.
Play all your Giants.
Yeah, play all the Giants, essentially, except for Rashad Jennings, because it looks like he might not play.
Redskins at the Giants. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to go Giants.
I'm going Giants as well, which makes me sad. we're going to speed things up a little bit here as we get into the afternoon games in Sunday and Monday Night Football. Because we're starting to run a little bit long. But let's move on to your game, the Rams at the Bucks. My takeaway is this is a Sims ball game, man. I feel like everybody, including myself, was a little bit low on him in the ranks.
What? I mean, I have him as the top 14 running back this week.
Oh, did you? Okay, maybe I missed yours.
Yeah, you must have missed mine. Yeah, I love Sims this week. He's going to get the majority of the running back looks. He is a borderline running back one in PPR leagues until Doug Martin returns. Mm-hmm. It's a a soft tissue injury. So those are the type of things that tend to linger. I love Sims at least for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I do too. So I didn't realize you had him so high. But I put him in as my 21st, and then I kept looking at him like, ooh, man, I need to move him up. So, what's your takeaway for this game?
I do want to just give a little brief statement about Austin Seferian-Jenkins getting released from the Buccaneers due to a DUI arrest, and the Buccaneers essentially saying, you know what, we're fucking done. And, him tweeting out, on to the next chapter, like nothing ever happened. So Austin Seferian-Jenkins is officially my most hated player in all football, and I'm just done
again
with him.
For those of you who are new to the podcast last year or new to the podcast this year, last year that was like Mike's like sleeper guy at tight end was Austin Seferian-Jenkins. Like, oh man, just wait, this guy's gonna get it together. This guy's gonna, yeah. Sorry, bud.
Never happened. So now he's going to end up being a top five tight end at some point for the New England Patriots sometime in the foreseeable future. But neither here nor there. Don't even get me started on Aqib Talib.
He looked great in Miami and Adam Gase's system.
Yeah. Don't even get me started on Aqib Talib after he left the Bucs being a all pro corner with the Denver Broncos winning a Super Bowl. Never mind that. But this is the type of game, for the Rams, it's so important. Not only for Todd Gurley, who, I would certainly try and buy low on. I don't know how much you can buy low on him for right now. I think people that bought him in the first round were already really sold on him. So, for me, I don't know how low you can really buy him. But I think that this is going to be a solid week for him. I still, I believe in Gurley. I have him listed as my 13th running back, which goes to show, especially with all the injuries, that this is not necessarily the greatest ranking for him. But I still believe in him for the season. The Buccaneers defense has been good against the run. So that's the only reason I kind of have him depressed in the rankings. But I like this as a Tavon Austin game. This is going to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defensive, secondary has been absolutely abysmal this year. And I think that this is certainly the type of game that Tavon Austin could, do well in against this secondary. So far in the first couple of weeks, he has 21 targets, which is, close to top 10 in football. We'll see what he does. But I think that if you are kind of, teetering on a couple of guys, I would feel a little bit more comfortable with Tavon Austin based on the fact that the Buccaneers secondary is so bad.
Yeah. I'm super high on Gurley this week. So I think he's an easy, I know people are been freaking out. I've seen him be traded in a couple leagues for less than market value. I think people are just crazily overreacting.
You think so? Would you take Latavius Murray? Like, you could probably trade Gurley or get Gurley in exchange for Murray right now. I'm doing the Gurley side all day. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's close.
DeMarco Murray, I think that's legitimately something you could do right now. I would even do Matt Forte. I know he has been amazing.
Wait, you would take Matt Forte for Gurley?
No, I all these guys I'm mentioning are guys I would trade away to get Gurley.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and I don't think that, people are feeling the same way. I think that people would hold on to Forte.
I think people are being ridiculous right now.
Yeah, but that's the thing. If you are a 2-0 owner, or if you end up being 3-0 after this week and you have some of these guys and the Gurley owner is 0-3, then this is the type of situation where you can certainly capitalize on that.
Well, you'll be a week too late because Gurley's going to run wild all over the Bucs defense. And people won't be freaking out.
We'll see.
All right. Rams at the Bucks. Who you got?
I'm going to go with the Bucks because I have to, but I do think I just have this gut feeling the Rams are going to win.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Bucks too. They're at home, West Coast team traveling east. So, let's move on to, two teams I can't figure out whatsoever. That's the San Francisco 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks. My takeaway is Seattle's O-line's got to get it together, or Russell Wilson's going to end up dead at some point this season.
he already lost a limb, so.
Yeah, right? I mean, he's working on one ankle at this point. But, I mean, this is not okay for them. I mean, it's okay because I don't like Seattle. But it's been atrocious. And if Seattle wants any part of their offense to get going, they need to block better. And I mean, that's been kind of the root of all the problems on offense.
The only offensive lines that have been worse thus far have been San Francisco, Jacksonville, Buffalo, and then Minnesota, you know, kind of going into the Matt Asiata argument. If they're, you know, if they can't block, then, you know, Jared McKinnon might be on the field more. That's something to take into account.
Well, and like San Francisco is doing a better job of getting the ball out quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
second in pace thus far. They are the second fastest offense, and obviously Chipotle's there. So,
and like I live in San Francisco. Like I said, I'm a Redskins fan, but I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, and a lot of people really upset when Chip Kelly got hired here. And I said, listen, I may not like him as a person, but dude knows offense.
He does, absolutely.
You know, and what we saw last week against Carolina, I know they lost. I know they lost by a lot. It was a lot closer than that, than the final score kind of said.
Yeah.
They had a real chance to win that game against Carolina, whose their defense has taken a step back this year, but it's not taken that much of a step back.
Yep.
What's your takeaway for this game?
Christian Michael, he is going to be getting the full running back snaps, essentially, since Thomas Rawls is doubtful in this game as of Friday when we're recording this. So there is a report out there that Pete Carroll wants to give him 20 or more touches this game. He's averaging 5 yards a carry through two contests. Yes, he had that massive fumble last week, so certainly that's something that's on the forefront of fantasy owners' minds. But Michael has been doing great with the opportunities he's been given this year. He also has caught, you know, 5 receptions out of the backfield for 30 yards. I love him. I think I've been, you know, pretty vocal about how much I like him as a player. And, you know, if he's getting the lion's share of the running back workload this week, then I think that will amount to at least running back 2 production. Start him at will.
All right. Well, here, I got a question for you then. Who would you rather in a half point PPR league? So, you know, kind of split the difference between standard and PPR. Would you play Christine Michael or Carlos Hyde?
Ooh, I would go with Michael.
Ooh. Well, it's, I'm going to hold you though, to that, because I'm going to switch him out in my lineup right now. Because I've been debating it the whole week.
Yeah, it's, I mean, that's tough, but I have Michael ranked just slightly above Hyde right now in standard, and I think that's, you know, I think that's the way to go. So, I mean, Hyde through 2 weeks hasn't been that amazing either. I mean, yeah, he had that amazing game against L.A., but, you know, Carolina pretty much stopped him in his tracks. And you know, Seattle's defense is obviously a little bit, you know, better in terms of the run defense than, you know, Carolina, for me at least.
All right. San Francisco at Seattle. Who you got?
Seattle.
Let's go ahead and move on to the Jets at Kansas City. Mike, what's your takeaway for this game?
That Revis Island is just not an island anymore. It's like a very populated.
He looks slow.
Yeah, it's bad. And like, for me, really, this is just a sentiment that I think that, you know, if you're worried about Jeremy Maclin, you shouldn't be. I know we already kind of mentioned that earlier on, you know, in terms of, you know, asking about trade candidates and stuff like that. But I think that this is a situation where you can start Jeremy Maclin and feel good about it. I'm not worried about this matchup at all. You know, overall, the Jets defense has not been impressive to me through a couple weeks of the season. Mm-hmm. So I think that moving forward, you know, certainly that this is an area that the Jets can improve on. But at least for now, I like Maclin for this week. I still think Spencer Ware is a top 10 running back play for this week. The Jets have not been good against the run either. You know, they've been, you know, kind of mediocre in that aspect. So I think that this is a team in the Jets that, you know, just defensively, we'll have to rely on that front seven, but needs to work some things out in the secondary. And it's a matchup that in the future we need to kind of look at differently than we did last season.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And that was kind of my takeaway as well, is I've not been impressed by Terrell Revis. Yeah. So those people who were like freaking out because Jeremy Maclin's probably going to get, you know, covered by Revis, he did not look good last week. Now, I mean, they've had an extra few days to prepare for this game. Maybe that makes a little bit of a difference. And the reason why I think I'm going to take the Jets to win this game. But yeah, he does not look like the same Darrell Revis, for sure.
I will just mention Brandon Marshall not practiced all week. Finally did get a limited session here on Friday.
Here's another question that only pertains to me and not anybody else listening to the podcast. So I'm in a dynasty league. I'm actually in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Dynasty League. It's an old dynasty league. We changed the name to Friends of Fantasy Benefits because a number of us who work for them play in the league. You're like the only person who doesn't.
Yeah, appreciate the invite.
Yeah, exactly. You'll get the next open spot. Someone offered me a trade today. They offered me Brandon Marshall and Adrian Peterson for Derrick Henry and DeAndre Washington.
Oh man, I'd take the Marshall and Peterson side.
Am I missing something?
No, you're not. But I think what the person's doing is banking on Henry being an absolute stud in this league, and I'm not ready to do that yet.
I'm not either. Not with Mariota as the quarterback there.
Yeah, no. Just going back to the Jets game really fast. I don't think you and I have mentioned Quincy Enunwa really at all thus far, but I really like him as a ad. I'm sure he's already kind of owned in a ton of places by now. But I especially with Brandon Marshall kind of hobbled, Enunwa has been getting a ton of targets. He has 14 in 2 weeks. He's been getting used in the red zone as well. They don't have a tight end, so you're essentially going to be seeing Enunwa, Decker, and Marshall in on the majority of the snaps, and obviously Matt Forte will be in there as well, but those are the targets, and that's this Jets offense. So I think especially in deeper leagues, he's a wide receiver 3 moving forward.
I completely agree with you. Let's go ahead and call this game Jets at the Chiefs. I'm gonna take the Chiefs. Interesting. I think that's the first time we've disagreed yet today on so far.
Yeah, and I know we're running long, but Jamal Charles, aren't you getting a little worried?
The dude I'm playing is starting Jamal Charles and has for the first 2 weeks of the season.
Wow. Well, it sounds like
in the Razzball Dream League.
Sounds like he knows what he's doing.
Yeah. His name is Dwayze. He looks like a live, action version of the Marshmallow Man. And if you're listening to this, I know you're playing me this week, and I appreciate you giving me a bye and stuff like that, but come on, dude, fucking don't start Jamal Charles.
from a fantasy angle, I think that this could be a situation where, something has happened, because from my understanding, he was almost ready to come back prior to the season starting in the preseason, essentially, and now we're hitting week 3, and he's definitely not playing this week. Don't know if he's going to play in week 4. How many weeks are we going to go by here until, we actually get concerned that there was a setback or that something is going on with him?
Yeah, you got to think at some point that there was maybe some sort of infection or, there's some sort of setback in kind of the rehab. But this seems really odd that we haven't gotten kind of real word on what is going on. Because, he was supposed to be back, like you said, kind of at the start of the season. And every week it's been oh, there's a really good chance he's going to make his return this week. And now we're looking at week 3, he's more than likely going to be out. And then that's really troubling.
Yeah, it's worrisome.
Let's move on to San Diego at Indianapolis. Mike, what's your takeaway for this game?
So many takeaways. I don't even know where to begin. I guess I'll go on the Indianapolis side of the ball. Obviously Dante Moncrief, my, love of my life other than my girlfriend, is, going to be out for the foreseeable future, 6 to 8 weeks or so. And that leaves Philip Dorsett. If Philip Dorsett is available in your league, I don't even care how shallow it is. He needs to be picked up right now.
Yeah, go grab him. Yeah, for sure.
First round pick, all the athleticism and talent in the world. Absolute stud player.
Not only was he a first round pick, they took him in the first round knowing they were not going to use him for a full year. Yeah. That's how highly they thought of him.
Yes.
And this guy was a guy they were not going to be using for at least a year, if not longer.
Mm-hmm.
And they were willing to use the number 23 pick on him in that draft.
Yeah. One of the league leaders in yards per reception thus far, over 24 yards per reception early on, which is just... I mean, that's insane. So for right now, man, I think that Philip Dorsett is a premier, you know, target, obviously. In terms of this game, it's interesting because Jason Verrett usually stays on the outside receiver. T.Y. Hilton has kicked into the slot a ton in three wide receiver sets. So we could be seeing a situation where Dorsett is not a viable playing option this week because he'll be on the outside a ton and Verrett will probably be masking him a ton in the on the defensive side of the ball. So, you know, at least for this week, I would kind of hold pat on Dorsett, even though you probably spent a ton of fab on him. I would kind of wait it out. T.Y. Hilton is an obvious, you know, must start for this week, especially the fact that Moncrief will be, you know, gone. He already leads the team in targets by a wide margin through 2 weeks, averaging 11 and a half targets per game over the first two. So Hilton is an obvious start, but I think this also gives a big boost in value to Dwayne Allen. Already has a touchdown this season. Probably the biggest target they have in the red zone, other than Jack Doyle, which I just don't know why that this is even a thing right now. I mean, the fact that he has two touchdowns and is leading the Colts in that area right now is insane. But I think Dwayne Allen will be an automatic top 10 tight end, at least for this season, because of the fact that they don't have any other red zone options, really. And Frank Gore, if there is a week that you're going to start him, has to be this week against San Diego.
Yeah. My takeaway is, I mean, is on San Diego side of the ball. It's Melvin Gordon. I mean, Danny Wood had done for the year. They're bringing in Dexter McCluster, you know, to kind of fill that role. I think he's actually going to have some PPR value at some point. It won't be this week. This week is going to be all about Melvin Gordon. And as soon as he has this amazing week, go ahead and sell all your shares.
Really?
Yeah. I'm not buying him as a top 10 back the rest of the way like a ton of people in the industry are.
Wow.
I think this week is going to be huge. Playing a great or an awesome defense to go against in the Indianapolis, which, you know, has guys less athletic than I am kind of roaming around out there in the linebacking core. And they have very little time to prepare another running back. But Melvin Gordon, is not that good of a running back. Before Danny Woodhead got hurt, everybody was like, oh, sell Melvin Gordon. He had a huge first week, sell Melvin Gordon. Now everybody's like, oh, Danny Woodhead's gone. Let's freak out and go back on what we said. No, he's still not a good running back.
Really? I think he's always been a pretty good running back. He was just hampered by that knee injury last year. You know, and the fact that they gave him 24 touches last week, 27 touches last week, I'm sorry.
Because they didn't have options, and they still don't have options for this week. Yeah. But going forward throughout the season, they're going to work other guys in.
Yeah, I mean, I love Tyrell Williams, and I love Travis Benjamin for this year. I already mentioned that I like Benjamin coming into the year, but Tyrell Williams is an absolute beast, and he's similar to Philip Dorsett. If you end up picking up both of them on the waiver wire, then you're in a really good spot in terms of, you know, just lower level guys that could fill in any given week if your starters are bad, if you're a Brandon Marshall owner and he's kind of, you know, iffy in terms of playing and stuff like that. But I like those weapons. There's certainly something to be said in that argument. I believe a little bit more in Gordon than you do. I'm not as high as everybody else seems to be right now, but I do believe in him a bit. Another side.
I believe in him for this week. I think I have him. I have him as my number six ranked running back this week.
Yeah.
So I completely believe in him this week. Going forward, though, I am off that train.
Yeah, and it's understandable why. I mean, we have a full year of him, you know, being absolutely mediocre, and then all of a sudden he's kind of popping off this year. Antonio Gates will not be in this game. Hunter Henry will assume the start, a kind of a preseason sleeper for a ton of you know, deeper league guys. So, you know, certainly somebody to monitor with Hunter
Henry. And a guy who's extremely talented.
Yeah,
more DFS play, though.
Yeah, he's very good, very athletic. He still is a bit raw, and he's a rookie tight end. So, you know, I don't think he's a viable option for this week, but in DFS, he could be.
Yeah. All right, San Diego at Indianapolis. Who you got?
I'm going to go Indianapolis.
I am too. Let's go ahead and move on to the Battle of Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh at Philadelphia. Mike, what's your takeaway?
Marcus Wheaton will be playing this game, so I think that all of you, you know, Eli Rogers and Sammy Coates fans out there that have been, you know, pretty much irrationally, you know, mentioning how great they are, will probably be able to kind of take a step back this week. We'll kind of just see how that's implemented into this offense. I think Jesse James has been solid the first couple of weeks, and I like him as a borderline tight end one play. D'Angelo Williams has been solid as well, but pretty much on the Pittsburgh end, I want to see how this wide receiver core gets targeted with Marcus Wheaton kind of getting added on to the getting implemented into the offense and being just another mouth to feed in this high octane scheme.
I think that's a great one. I got a question for you, and my takeaway is, why do people hate Jordan Matthews?
They shouldn't. I have no idea why, because he
I don't get it. You and I seem to love him. You have him as your number 6 ranked wide receiver this week. I have him as my number 10th ranked wide receiver. Eli, 27th. Eric, 31st. I don't understand what they're not seeing. I mean, this is a team that is getting him the ball a ton.
23 targets in 2 weeks, tied for second in all of football behind Mike Evans, tied also with Jarvis Landry, T.Y. Hilton, Jeremy Maclin. Those are elite names, everybody. Antonio Brown right underneath that, Kelvin Benjamin, A.J. Green, Marvin Jones. These are all options that are wide receiver ones, essentially. No reason for Jordan Matthews to be looked at differently, in my opinion. I'll definitely say that I was worried about this, this Eagles wide receivers coming into this year. I'm not worried about Jordan Matthews from here forward. This Carson Wentz has proven to me that he is a fine quarterback, at least for now. And he does not turn the ball over. He makes sound decisions. He's very mature.
Great fit for that system.
He is. He's patient. I love Carson Wentz with Doug Peterson, and I love that. I love Jordan Matthews based on that, because it's just so fluid, it's so natural. There's nothing kind of forced about it. Everything is just great. Jordan Matthews is a buy for me right now. I would trade Larry Fitzgerald for Jordan Matthews in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I would too. I was big on him to start the year, one of my few wins so far this year. All right, Pittsburgh at Philadelphia. Mike, who you got?
I'm gonna go Pittsburgh. I don't feel great about that either, though.
I'm gonna go Pittsburgh. I think, and I do feel pretty good about that. Let's go ahead and move on to the Sunday night game. Talk about Chicago at Dallas. I'm very interested to see if they continue to try to force the ball to Dez Bryant. A lot of people were freaking out after week one over Dez Bryant and what's going to happen. They made a point of getting the ball to him in week two. Will they continue to do that in Dallas?
Yeah, I think they will, and that's just because they don't really have any other options at this point.
Well, so. I mean, Cole Beasley has been a board, especially in a PPR league, been a usable asset.
Yeah, he has. I mean, he has actually more targets than Dez Bryant in the two games. Dez Bryant obviously being the much more supreme red zone threat. Jason Witten has also, he had that 14. That's another thing is that, between week one, between Cole Beasley and Jason Witten in week one, they both combined for 26 targets. So last week, you saw Dez Bryant get 12, and then those two got 6 and 4 respectively. I think that going forward, this is Dez Bryant's offense. It's going to be inconsistent with Dak Prescott. I think this week in particular, we're going to be seeing an Ezekiel Elliott week. I have him as my number 3 running back for this week as well. So that goes to show you that, especially with Chicago's defense, they've just gotten decimated by injuries the last couple weeks or so. And I just don't think that there's any way that they're going to be able to stop that Dallas offensive line from letting Zeke run crazy on them. I know that Zeke had a couple of fumbles last week, and we saw Alvin Morris get a score. But for me, I think that Zeke is going to be the main beneficiary this week. But to answer your question about Dez, I think that this is going to be a continued situation where he is the number one pass game target, with Cole Beasley and Jason Witten being fine role players.
I agree with you. Chicago at Dallas, who you got?
I'm going to go with Dallas. Do want to just mention Jordan Howard is probably going to continue to get more and more implemented into this offense as the weeks go on. I know I was a big Jordan Howard fan coming into the season. I think that this is going to end up, when the season is all said and done, with this being possibly a complete timeshare, like I kind of predicted it would be from the get-go. So Jeremy Lakeford, if you have a ton of shares of him, in PPR, I think it's okay for him to be a running back two for you, but in standard formats, I think he's going to be more of a flex.
Time to sell, yeah. If you can, try to sell him, I would.
Agreed.
With Jay Cutler out, are you worried about Alshon Jeffrey at all?
No, I'm not, because like I mentioned in the DFS show, Brian Hoyer knows how to target the number one receiver on his team. So DeAndre Hopkins had a career year last year with Brian Hoyer at the helm. Josh Gordon had an amazing few games with Brian Hoyer. So I think that this has no effect on Alshon Jeffrey's value at all.
they could pretty much have anybody throwing the ball to Alshon Jeffrey, and he's going to catch it.
Absolutely.
All right. I'm taking Dallas over Chicago.
Wow. All right. Oh, well, I said Dallas, so I don't know why I'm saying wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's surprising. I said Dallas, too. Oh, my goodness.
Atlanta at New Orleans. What is your takeaway, Mike?
Willie Snead is suffering from a toe injury. We don't know if he's going to play. He did not practice on Friday, but, you know, it sends into Monday night game. We'll be kind of checking out whether he practices on Saturday. So make sure that you are kind of tuned into that aspect of things, especially if you, you know, are kind of relying on Willie Snead. But, you know, my main takeaway is that I think that this is going to be an absolute juggernaut of a game. I think it's pretty apparent that New Orleans is amazing at home. This is going to be an inspired crowd. I just think that this is going to be an absolute shootout. So, you know, I think you pretty much fire up anybody that's involved in this game. And, you know, at least from the New Orleans side, if Willie Snead were to be held out, I think that this would be an uptick in Michael Thomas and Mark Ingram's value.
Yeah, Michael Thomas, baby.
So Mark Ingram, you know, from a season-long perspective right now, certainly has been concerning. I think people are getting a little bit worried about, you know, the fact that he hasn't been, you know, doing great here these first couple of games. But I think things are going to get, you know, I think things are going to get better soon. You know, he still is averaging more than 4 yards a carry, has a couple receptions in there, 6 receptions for 46 yards. We have seen Travis Cadet kind of get more and more involved in the offense from a pass game perspective. But I think that this is ultimately going to be a situation where at the end of the year, we look at Ingram as a top 10 running back. It's just kind of, it is what it is. So for right now, just kind of ride the storm. If you can buy Ingram, you know, low, I would certainly try and do that. But I don't think Travis Cadet is, you know, going to pose a massive threat, you know, forward.
All right. You know, I want to talk quickly about, you know, before we wrap up, about the Atlanta running back situation. Where are you at on who this is the guy to own? Are you freaking out? I mean, I don't have any shares of either of these guys. I thought Devontae Freeman was going too high, and I think Tevin Coleman is just a bad running back in general.
Do you really? I mean, I thought that you were a fan of Coleman, at least coming into last year.
No, I was a fan of Freeman coming into last year.
Yeah, I mean, and so was I. I've always kind of thought that Freeman was underutilized going into last year. But as far as this year is concerned, I mean, it's a complete timeshare, everybody. It's not, you know, I mean, last week, you know, in particular against Oakland, you saw Devontae Freeman 17 rushes for 93 yards, no receptions, which is a massive problem. And then
I think that'll change, though. Like, if I could, I'm buying low on Devontae Freeman.
Yeah, for me, I'm not. You know, I think that this is a team in the Falcons that the regime did not draft Freeman, and they don't owe him anything. You know, last year, he had 73 receptions and 3 receiving touchdowns, almost 600 yards receiving as well. If this is just something that's going to be not used in his game, his, you know, ability to catch the ball out of the backfield, then we're looking at a guy that, yes, he ran for over 1,000 yards last year, but that was on 260 touches. He's not going to get that if we continue the same pace that we're at right now.
Sure, and that's what I mean. Like I was out on Freeman this year because I believed he was being overdrafted.
Me too.
But if I can get him for a much cheaper value than where he went on draft day, then I'm totally fine, because I don't believe that Tevin Coleman is a very good running back. And I think Devontae Freeman is the better all-around back. My biggest fear with Freeman coming into last year was his size. I assumed at some point Freeman would be the guy. I didn't think it would be because of injury necessarily. I don't believe in Tevin Coleman.
Yeah, I like the offensive line for Atlanta a little bit. I think they're doing a good job right now. They're top 12.
They're definitely improved.
Yeah, they're top 12 according to Football Outsiders metrics right now, which is a great thing to see. You know, for me, I like Tevin Coleman more. I feel like the Atlanta Falcons, you know, front office drafted him for a reason, and he was there to fit the Kyle Shanahan scheme. So far, he's done a great job doing it. So, I mean, 95 yards receiving in week one. Last week, he had over, you know, almost over 70 yards in total offense against Oakland. So for 2 weeks in a row, he's been a formidable option in standard formats. And, you know, 7 receptions in 2 weeks is nice for PPR leagues as well. For me, I'm leaning Coleman right now. But in general, I don't really want much of this backfield, because I think that this is going to be a timeshare from now forward. And, you know, that's just kind of, I think, the way it's going to shake out. If I had to pick one, if I'm going to buy one for the rest of the year, I'm going to go with Coleman. And, you know, that's just based on the fact that I think that this is the fact that he is a little bit more talented in this scheme. And he's, you know, a year two player kind of starting to get things underway.
their schedule toughens up after this week. They've got Carolina, Denver, Seattle, and San Diego's whatever. But, you know, Green Bay, and then Philadelphia's got a good run defense, you know, coming up through week 10 before their bye. So
it's a brutal schedule. Seattle has a good run D. Denver has a good run D. Green Bay has a good run D. Tampa Bay, Philly. I mean, that's a, and then Arizona on top of that.
Yeah.
So it's a brutal run defense schedule.
Yeah, it's going to toughen up. I mean, like I said, if I'm going to buy either of these guys, I'm buying Freeman, but I'd have to be able to buy pretty low.
Would you do Lacy for him? Like, if you had Lacy, would you trade?
No, I'd rather have Lacy.
Yeah, me too. You know, it's kind of tough. If you had LeGarrette Blount, would you trade for Freeman?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm close there. I still would probably hang on Blount over Freeman for now. What about Theo Riddick?
In standard, yes. In PPR, no.
Okay. Yeah, we'll see, man. I you know, for me, I would take Freeman above, you know, or I would take the other guy above Freeman in all of those. So
that's fair. All right. Atlanta at New Orleans. Who you got?
Gotta go to New Orleans in this situation.
Yeah, you gotta take. I'm taking New Orleans too. All right, that is gonna ramp us up. Mike, why don't you tell people what you're working on and where you can reach on Twitter?
Yeah, you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner FWFB, and you know, just check out the DFS podcast. We have the off the record, you know, shows coming on the podcast as well that are on our feed. They do a great job, Andy Singleton and Tao Benedict, and you know, the numerous guests that they have on. Certainly excited to have them be a part of Friends with Fantasy Benefits. Baseball is also going, you know, continue to go throughout the offseason, so certainly check that out. We have a brand new revamped NFL page on the Friends with Fantasy Benefits site, so be sure to check that out. Updated scores, standings, all that stuff that you need. Our ranking are up on the site as well. Just all types of stuff that you can kind of check out. I will be done with my kind of content for the baseball site I write for next week, so I will be kind of putting forth a lot more of football content written wise on the site as well. So certainly something to look out for in the future.
You can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason FWFB. You can catch me on all the other podcasts that I do. You can read my baseball stuff over at Fangraphs, my football stuff over at friendsfantasybenefits.com. Every Sunday morning, I give my picks against the spread for the day. Like I said at the top of the show, did not fare real well last week. Did okay week one. I was fantastic the entire last season, so I expect a rebound. But you can definitely check that out. And then give us a rate and review on the podcast. Really helps us out. So with that, that is going to wrap us up. For Mike and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic football season.
Oh wait, that's the wrong outro.